Let me call this special meeting of the Goleta City Council of June 16th to order. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Could we have a roll call, please, Madam Clerk?
Councilmember Seves? Councilmember Bennett?
Here.
Councilmember Perotti?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Easton?
Here.
Mayor Connell?
Here. And just for the record, let's note that Councilmember Seves is recused from this meeting because of a potential conflict that he has. We now go to public forum. Is there anybody who wishes to speak to an item not on today's agenda?
I have no speakers since
okay.
Mayor.
Okay. So we now move then to the one item we have today. If you could read it, the title for us, please.
Cabrillo Business Park, Deckers Project, CEQA Addendum, Development Agreement Amendment, Case Number 110460A, and Reimbursement Agreement.
Thank you. Mr. Giles?
I will kick off for you, Mayor, members of the council. Before you today, again, is the Cabrillo Business Park for amendment of the development agreement. You'll recall that we met last week, and you had a public hearing sitting as the planning agency, performing your planning agency functions. Today is another opportunity for public input, as is required by the government code. Today you will be considering an amendment to the development agreement. You will also be considering the environmental document that would allow not only the modification to the development agreement, but also the approval of the project changes. The development agreement is done by ordinance, so if it is introduced today, it will be continued to your meeting next Tuesday for your consideration for adoption. The project itself, the approvals to the changes, is actually not before you. That is are considered to be relatively minor changes, and they would be subject to staff's review, and that has been scheduled for subsequent to this meeting. Staff would consider making those changes. If the development agreement is approved, the amendments to the development agreement are approved, which would allow those changes to move forward. As you recall, sitting as the planning agency and hearing this matter last week, you forwarded to yourselves a recommendation for adoption of the resolution approving the CEQA addendum, also a recommendation to introduce the amendment to the development agreement. Mr. Chase and Ms. Miller will be able to speak to the specifics of the project, although it's not before you, is obviously part and parcel of what is being allowed by the proposed amendment to the development agreement, and also gives you the understanding, the context in which your matter is being heard today. There are two primary changes that are proposed to the development agreement. One is with regard to electricity poles along the western property boundary. There's currently 13 poles, and the development agreement as currently approved would require that all of those poles be removed and that the power lines be undergrounded. The proposed amendment would change that to require only the removal of the first two power poles and the undergrounding of the power line that is supported by those poles. The remainder of the power poles would be able to remain. And also, there's a change in the schedule of improvements. The improvements along Hollister Avenue and Los Caneros, which according to the current development agreement would not necessarily have to be done at this stage, but could be done with a subsequent phase. The applicant, under the proposed modification to the development agreement, would advance those and actually perform those consistent with this first phase of development in the business park. As we mentioned last week, our understanding of the information that we've been provided thus far is that although all of these changes are being requested in the applicant's ability to work with Deckers Outdoor Corporation to locate their world headquarters at this site, that deal has not been finalized, but is in negotiation, and an agreement in principle is in place, and they intend to move forward, but did not have the deal finalized. We certainly have not seen that or had an opportunity to review that. With that understanding in place, the question would appropriately come up: what happens to this transaction should the transaction between Deckers Outdoor and the Cabrillo Business Park not be consummated? And what was proposed under the development agreement changes, the changes that I just outlined, the changes to the power poles, the scheduling of the frontage improvements along Kellogg and Hollister, those would stay in place. They would still do the frontage improvements with the first phase, and the modifications to the undergrounding requirement would also stay in place. However, the modifications that staff will be considering later this month, if those are approved, if the deal is not consummated with Deckers, those would not be, the applicant would not build those, but would revert to what has previously been approved. The building would go back to what has previously been approved. The other item that is before you today that you did not have before you last week is a reimbursement agreement. When the development agreement was originally drafted, it was contemplated that off-site improvements that the applicant would be making on public property, the frontage improvements along Kellogg and Los Caneros, that they would be making a cash contribution and the city would actually be constructing those benefits. The transaction before you today allows them to actually perform those construction activities themselves as they are doing the work on their property. It allows us to achieve a great deal of efficiencies, both in the construction and construction scheduling, but also in terms of cost savings by having one contractor out there who is able to achieve the savings by having all of the work at one time. However, since their contribution to these projects, it would be exclusively their obligation to pay for all of the impacts. There are public improvements that they would not have 100% responsibility for. There's a mechanism now in which future traffic impact fees that are paid to the city by projects in the future, including first off the Deckers project or any other projects that would have an impact on these locations. Those funds would then be available to reimburse the applicant for the contributions above and beyond their proportionate share as is required. So that change is made in the development agreement. You also have before you today a separate reimbursement agreement that's proposed between the city and the applicant, which would put in place the mechanisms that would allow that to those efficiencies to be realized. And we have closely reviewed that. We had outside counsel work with the applicant for Deckers, and both sides are satisfied with that is appropriate. I'm going to turn the presentation over to Mr. Chase and Ms. Miller. They'll talk about the specifics there. I think they've also have some changes and modifications from what's in your packet that they can also mention to you, so we make sure we get those incorporated in the motion. And I will be available, as will Ms. Smith, to answer any questions that you might have.
Okay, thank you very much, Tim. Members of the council, good afternoon. The presentation is going to go from sort of, stridations down. We've got Tim's broad overview. I'm going to bring you in at the next level down, and Patty's going to land this thing, okay? That's what we're doing. Now, some of this is, quite a bit of this, is information you've already heard. But this is a public hearing of the City Council. So even though you've heard this, it's important for us to get a bit of this information onto the record. I think it will also help frame some of the questions that you may have. We've tried to orient this presentation in a way that anticipates those questions. The first of two slides that we'll be presenting this afternoon is up. This is the Cabrillo Business Park. The project is at the southwest corner of Los Caneros Road and Hollister Avenue. Many parties throughout the community know this as the former Delco site. It is approximately 92 acres in size, and in April of 2007, a master plan was approved by the City Council at that time. That master plan is reflected on the screen. It has since twice been modified, both times with slight adjustments to buildable space. Now, the modified plan that's in place today involves 22 separate lots. On those lots, there are 21 buildings. Once built out, it will involve 7 existing buildings and 14 new buildings. In terms of buildable space, it amounts to approximately 949,000 square feet of buildable space, 707,000 square feet of which is new. It also includes an area which on this plan is right in here, which is a 19-acre wetland rehabilitation area. And of course, on the plan, you can see quite a bit of green space that's built in. This master plan also involves 2,519 parking spaces. There's quite a bit of passive and active recreation area that is built into this master plan as well. On April 5th, the owners of the business park submitted an application to the city to provide for a third modification to that master plan. The application is, of course, to foster the real estate transaction with Deckers Outdoor Corporation for the development of Deckers headquarters campus. Slide number two takes us to the quadrant of the master plan that is immediately at the southwest corner of Hollister Avenue and Los Caneros. This would be the Deckers campus. This would involve 14 of the 92 acres of the master plan. It would involve 4 buildings and possibly an option for 2 other buildings, not within this quadrant. It does involve 192,000 square feet of buildable space. There is a reconfiguration of buildable space because originally this quadrant showed 5 buildings. That's what the council saw in 2007. That's what was envisioned at that point in time. Now we're looking at 4 buildings. The reconfiguration of a formerly planned retail and restaurant buildable pad with 2 buildings on it of some 17,500 square feet in size now would be converted into a single building of some 45,000 square feet in size. That is the corner building, which you'll see with the rotunda feature right here. This building would be replete with an executive office space, employee gymnasium, multi-purpose space for dining and fashion showroom, as well as takeout restaurant counters, and space for 6 or 7 small retail floor areas featuring Deckers signature brands. There is a reconfiguration of a formerly planned self-storage building, which formerly was sized at 73,500 square feet, and that's down here. Today, it is resized into a 30,000 square foot warehouse for showroom and retail goods. Now, the specific components include the signature executive office that we showed of 45,000 square feet, building one, the large corporate office building here of 75,000 square feet, building two, 40,000 square feet, and again, building three down below of 30,000 square feet. When you add up that buildable space, it is approximately 14,000 square feet smaller than what was contemplated for this particular quadrant of the master plan and what was approved in 2007. Again, the Deckers project involves four rather than five separate buildings. The grading quantities are similar to that which was envisioned in 2007. The building pad elevations and configurations are relatively the same. So, too, are the stormwater quantities and the system of bioswales, detention basins, and storm drains. So, too, are on- and off-site public works improvements. The location of access points into and within the business park are relatively the same. The parking lot layout is relatively the same. In fact, what we have in this layout is the addition of 39 more spaces than what was originally anticipated. The landscape layout is substantially enhanced in this quadrant. For example, in the parking area that extends south of building number 12, building number 1 throughout this area here, what we have is some additional green elements, including a tree canopy or urban grove, as the landscape architects like to call it, along with some permeable decking with bioswale grasses. If you will, it creates a form of a cool pavement. The wetland restoration area of some 19 acres, which is directly below and to the south of this campus, may proceed sooner than was originally anticipated. And again, as we've indicated, both recreational elements, public service connections, access points are all relatively the same. There are no new or worsened environmental impacts beyond those effects that were already addressed in a final environmental impact report that was prepared and certified for the 2007 master plan. The Deckers project, in fact, accelerates the timing of many mitigation measures and the fulfillment of a number of development standards. I'm going to provide just a few examples of that. The project includes full frontage street improvements along Hollister Avenue from the edge of the Kmart Center to Los Caneros Road. This would include a new four-way signalized intersection at Hollister Avenue and Coromar Drive. This would occur prior to the occupancy of the first building to be constructed. Another example of bringing forth and accelerating mitigation measures and development standards, we would see full frontage street improvements along Los Caneros Road from its intersection with Hollister Avenue to the southerly limits of this particular quadrant that's here, prior to the occupancy of the third building to be constructed. We would also see off-site intersection improvements at Los Caneros Road and Calle Corral. You may recognize Calle Corral as up by the Los Caneros freeway interchange. Then upon approval of the final wetlands mitigation program, the project will also include frontage street improvements further south along Los Caneros Road between the southerly limit of this quadrant down to the city limit. Project also involves the undergrounding, as Tim mentioned, of two northerlymost utility poles and lines along the western property border. This is over by the Kmart Center for a distance of some 260 linear feet. All in all, these improvements include road widening, the construction of medians, street medians, curbs, gutters, sidewalks, traffic signals, bus turnouts, bus shelters, etc. Tim talked a little bit about what's happening today. I want to give you a broader context for a minute. There's actually five things that are going on around this project all at the same time. Three of which are in front of you this afternoon. First of all, in front of you is the CEQA addendum. It is the document that reports out our analysis and our finding about the environmental effects. And again, we have found that there are no new or worsened impacts beyond those that were previously disclosed and addressed in 2007. There is, second of all, the amendment of the development agreement between the city and the business park owner, and Tim has provided the details on that. They do revise the phasing of the on- and off-site infrastructure improvements. They do clarify how and when the business park owner will be reimbursed for traffic improvements that are provided beyond the owner's proportionate responsibility. Development agreement also addresses the altering of the undergrounding scheme of utility poles and associated lines. The amendment also does some important housekeeping by updating and revising various exhibits such that we have internal consistency across the board. Tim also mentioned that there is a reimbursement agreement. It's attachment 4 in your packet that gets into the mechanics of the reimbursement itself. Fourth, the planning director will take up the amendment of the development plan, the site plan and the actual development plan itself, on June 28th. The notice is posted for that action. The zoning code provides that level of decision-making by the director on projects that have been previously entitled. We know that to be the case. When there is a level of substantial conformity to what was entitled. So in this particular case, the Deckers project comports to the 2007 master plan, basically has the same physical orientation, has a slightly smaller footprint, adds more parking spaces. We've concluded in this analysis there are no new or aggravated impacts, and in fact the timing of some of the mitigation measures and certainly of the city standards for public works is advanced. Of equal importance, the Design Review Board, which is the fifth part of this process, will take up decision-making on the preliminary design plans at its meeting on June 28th at 3 p.m., and the notice has been posted for that as well. I want you to know that the Design Review Board has seen the plans in two recent meetings. They've worked with the applicant really bringing it from large concept scale now down into the finer details of the design of these buildings. On June 28th, the Design Review Board, we believe, would be poised to take action on the preliminary design plans. Should that occur, we have a placeholder for the final plan review to occur before the Design Review Board on July the 12th. So again, there's five process-wise components of this. You have three of them before you this afternoon. And with that, I'm going to turn the rest of the presentation to my colleague, Patty Miller.
Thank you, Mayor and Council members. I only have a few additional details to add. I will highlight some information regarding the CEQA addendum for you and then identify the changes that are being recommended to the documents in your packet. And as to the latter, you have some material that was handed out to you so that in case it gets complicated to follow the changes being provided by me verbally, you can see them for yourselves. But I'll get to that in a moment. With regard to the addendum, the existing environmental documentation includes a very thorough EIR upon which the addendum is based, prepared for the original project, and the environmental record also includes two prior addenda prepared for minor changes to the original project, and these are from the 2007-2008 time period. As Mr. Chase mentioned already, an addendum is appropriate when the changes to a project as approved are minor in nature and no major revisions are required to the previous EIR and there are no new significant environmental impacts or an increase in severity of previously identified impacts. So just a moment on those previously identified impacts. The EIR did identify two Class 1 impacts and several Class 2 impacts. As to the Class 1, the first one is with regard to solid waste, and that is not because this is a wasteful project. It's just the sheer size of it. And as a result, appropriate source reduction and recycling has been required. And those are conditions that were originally applied to the project, and those are 84 and 85. So as to the only other Class 1 impact, this is regarding Los Caneros Road below the city limits, so to the south. This stretch of road is not within the city's jurisdiction. It's within the County of Santa Barbara's jurisdiction, and therefore not within the ability of the city to control the correction of capacity deficiencies. So we disclosed all that. A mitigation was still required in the form of payment of fees and a fair share transfer of some portion of the fees to the county. And that was original condition 100. I'm not going to go into great detail on the Class 2 impacts. There were a lot of them. You can see the captions in the addendum. For example, aesthetics, cultural resources, biology, geology, land use, noise. And all of these can be mitigated below the level of significance. So, also as previously stated, the addendum before the council today describes the changes to the development agreement. Your aesthetic section goes over the changes to the undergrounding of utility poles and provides details of the development plan amendment that describes the Cabrillo Business Park Deckers project. I won't repeat those. We've already gone over the building reconfiguration, architecture, height, and the overall reduction in 14,000 square feet of 14,000 square feet. Grading, drainage, site improvements, access, parking, landscaping, and the wetland restoration remain largely the same. I also wanted to point out that there are no, in addition to no new significant impacts or increase in severity of previously identified impacts, there are no substantive changes to previously identified mitigation measures. So just for the record, I'm going to take a moment and go over changes to your packet. And the first changes I will go over affect the CEQA addendum that I have just been speaking about. These are minor. On big page 21, which is just the project description portion of your document, we had last week already identified that parking has actually gone up. And then didn't catch one phrase that needed to be changed in that regard. And so on big page 21, under site improvements and access and parking, we have the correct number of spaces. We want to show that the increase is 39 and not 21, and that's on line 8 of that paragraph. Big page 23, which is the discussion under the aesthetic section. So just at the top of that page, line 3, it's important to note in that those first few sentences bring up the subject of the rotunda, which is 39 feet high. So you may be wondering how we get there if the zone district height is 35 feet. It's considered an architectural feature, and our zoning code does allow that such projections can be allowed, and even up to a height of 50 feet. This one is, again, at 39 feet, so we would add language in there that recognizes it as an architectural projection. Moving on to big page 26. At the bottom, we had inserted an updated energy condition, which under the circumstances is not necessary. So we would delete the new measure, which is at the bottom of the page, Energy-1. So the text at that point would read similar to other sections that call out mitigation measures, and it would note that the mitigation measure would still be a recommended one, and it is the original Energy-1 conditions, condition.
Excuse me, does that mean you take out all this A through M?
That's correct. And there is an original condition 54 in your packet, and that's the one that we would keep. All of this relates to the EIR's energy section and the issue of greenhouse gases. And we find that the original condition is sufficient because the project would be subject to the new CalGreen regulations. And we have also learned that the Deckers buildings will be made solar ready in order to accommodate future installation of photovoltaic panels. So the original condition 54 is sufficient. And I do point out that this is not a significant impact. It's a class 3 adverse but not significant impact. But ultimately, we do still have that condition and that circumstance that the Deckers buildings will be made solar ready. So I'll go a little bit more quickly through the conditions. The caption is 11037 conditions, and those go along with this current project. So on big page 79 of your packet is where you would find them. And I think as a result of a super copy issue, there are two modifications required in that list that need to be added. And one is to allow sign structures in the setback, because, of course, that's where signs are. So we would provide for that. And those still would have to be consistent, though, with the overall sign plan. They just can't put them anywhere. And then a modification with regard to having certain numbers of parking spaces on certain lots. If this were just a one-lot project, all of its parking would be calculated as to the requirements for one lot. But it's a campus. It's a master plan. So as long as the project as a whole meets its parking requirements, we don't require that you somehow wedge so and so many on each lot. It doesn't make sense, and it may not end up with the correct parking circulation. On big page 79, staying on that page, at the end of condition 4, a very minor addition just for clarification, and that is condition 4 talks about other agency permits that may be required, and we wanted to identify, including but not limited to, APCD and the county fire department. Quickly to page 81, I've already mentioned that. That is to take out or just delete condition 13, and we will stay with original condition 54. Minor change to page 83. This is where we see an update to fire department conditions, and there are lots of line items, A through P. And we just wanted to note that starting with C through F, we would add a subheading in, to clarify the timing, which would be prior to each structure being erected. And then for the remainder of the items, G through P, those are prior to occupancy clearance. And the last thing is part of what was handed to you were original letters from agencies and departments. In the original conditions, condition 158 identified a list of agencies and departments that had conditions. And we just find that for convenience, it's easier to attach these letters to the back of that particular part of your packet than have somebody look at condition 158, see that it references a certain letter, and then have to go dig somewhere in the file for it. So that's what that's about. That concludes the information I wanted to present to you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Before we move to the public hearing, are there questions for staff? Ms. Brody.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I have a question for Ms. Miller. When you were referring to under energy section, are you saying that the building will be retrofitted for, it's not necessarily have the solar now, but in the future, and all the fittings and everything will be there in place so that they can do it? Is that my understanding of what you were saying?
So, Member Perotti, that's correct.
Thank you.
Well,
I can do it now.
Yes, go ahead. I mean, I have one, but,
okay.
couple, but you go ahead.
Thank you. I guess I have a question, and I don't know if this is the proper time to ask it, about the utility poles. Is the reason that all the utility poles are not under the original agreement, that's they're only doing two that, at this point, is it a funding issue? Is it because of the expense?
There are a couple considerations at mine. The first one is this is a financial consideration that stems from a discussion with the city as to making certain that the use of project funds gives us the biggest bang for our buck. The first two power poles that are immediately south of Hollister Avenue are readily visible from the street. The other power poles, you'd have to be on the property itself or over on the Kmart property to see, mm-hmm. because they're tucked in behind buildings. We clearly had an interest in the first two poles coming down, no question about it. Other than that, this is an accommodation agreement that's been reached between the applicant and the city, trying to get the project dollars to where they needed to be spent to give us what we thought would be the best community improvement. And that's what we arrived at.
Thank you. I have another question regarding the funds that Goleta will use to the traffic. The funding that the applicant will, they're going above and beyond on the construction and road improvements and a lot of the improvements that they're making, and more than what they're required. And if I understand correctly, you're saying that the and then we, the city, are responsible for reimbursing what they've gone above and beyond. And I understand that if I read this correctly, we have 30 days to refund that money. And this, I just want to make sure that, and I heard correctly that it's coming from other monies that we have set aside for capital improvement projects, and will this be a problem later on with projects that we have in the pipeline that that we're looking at moving forward with?
Mayor, members of the council, no, the reimbursement for the improvements done over and above the proportionate share of the applicant will be reimbursed out of future development contributions by other applicants. The first and foremost of that being that the applicant, Saris Regis, the owner of the Cabrillo Business Park, is going to be doing these improvements and will be entitled to a refund. And then when they come forward with pay fees for these buildings that they're actually proposing now, those fees that come to the city would then be part of that reimbursement of that. And similarly, as long as other projects that are coming online that are paying fees for their proportionate share of these improvements, those fees that the city collects will then be reimbursed to the applicant, to Saris Regis. So their reimbursement comes as the city collects the proportionate fees from the various applicants that benefit from those improvements. It's a collection. It's something that will occur in the future over time, rather than a strict repayment out of any current existing city funds, general fund or otherwise.
Okay. Thank you,
Ms. Reeson.
It's been my understanding that the rest of the power poles, there will be undergrounding of that line when work in that area is contemplated by the applicant.
Mayor and Councilmember Easton, if I understood your comment correctly, The first two, so the northernmost power poles will be undergrounded. And I think your question was whether or not the other ones would be undergrounded at some future point in time. And the answer is no. So the request in the action before you is to underground the two northernmost ones only. Now, I guess I would also add, if there were some major change to the project in the future that brings it before us again and there's some way to get that, then that would be a future thing. But before you today is, as long as this entitlement is in place, that may be granted after all these actions happen, 11 would remain above ground.
I'd like to add a comment. The issue of utility poles and lines in this particular instance is not a matter of significant environmental effect. There is a community benefit to seeing that those poles and lines that are visible are undergrounded. What we do have is a situation of poles and lines that are tucked behind a series of buildings and are out of line of sight from the streetscape itself. You'll notice these poles clearly when you're on the properties themselves. But from the public's view shed, it's the first two that are readily apparent. And from a community benefit standpoint, we saw value in assuring that they came down.
I understand that. My understanding was based upon conversations with the applicant. He may seek to address that point in any comments he makes.
I have a couple of questions. The first relates to the reimbursement agreement. I was actually quite surprised when I read this that, in fact, the developer is going to be responsible for doing this work rather than the city. Would I be correct that the city will actually be providing the design and specifications for this improvement?
Yes, Mayor. All of the designs and improvements will meet city standards, be improved by the City Community Services Department. All of the work will be the work that we direct and according to our designs and specifications.
And the city would be inspecting it?
City will be inspecting
and signing off on it?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. And the reimbursement, I mean, the sources of reimbursement could be not just projects at Cabrillo Business Park, but you talk about Los Caneros and Calle Corral. I mean, you've got other developments in relation to that. So would some of these reimbursements possibly be coming from developments that are not on Cabrillo Business Park?
Absolutely. If you look at each of the improvements that is done off-site, there's an allocation that is done which kind of sets up a proportionate share. When we look at the applicant and say your proportionate share isn't 100%, we identify which other properties will be contributing to that and identify their proportionate share. There's an opportunity as well as we look at this. We do have a breakdown of proportionate share, proportionate responsibility for each project that is done, each improvement that is done, so that we can track that back and make sure that we do collect the improvements, the fees, proper fees, so that they can be reimbursed to the applicant. But also, this is part of our overall GTIP program. The Transportation Improvement Plan that we have will be collecting dollars throughout the city for improvements. And there's a amount of flexibility that we have in allocating those dollars. What this reimbursement agreement really does is identifies that at some point in the future, we're not just going to stop collecting fees from those other property owners and leave Ceres Regis kind of holding the bag for the improvements they did on a promise of a future reimbursement from those projects. We're just agreeing that we will continue to collect those money so that they can eventually be made whole.
And some of this actually might come from the university's LRDP, right, on Los Caneros?
Yes, to the extent that we're able, mm-hmm. We're collecting fees from those as well.
Okay. The other, I guess, is a little bit more of a comment than a question, but I had previously asked Mr. Chase about the height of the rotunda, and it's beginning to look like we may have a city full of little towers that are over 35 feet, since we're looking at two in the last week, basically. And I don't know if this constitutes some sort of change in policy or whether it fits in with the zoning ordinance as it's being developed, but I'm not sure that I want to see towers popping up all over the city. I don't know if you have any response on that.
Well, I wanted to give you the opportunity to have that as a comment.
Okay, you can leave it as a comment. That's
thank
fine.
You. The one thing I do want to press upon City Council, our zoning code guides this issue, as does our general plan. There is indeed a provisions for architectural projections. I certainly don't want to get between the council and your intentions, and those of us on the design side of it, in our eagerness to design away, particularly those of us that work with a design review board. I'll just leave it at that. Thank you.
Well, I think the only 50-foot one I remember coming up was the cross on the top of the proposed St. Athanasius Church, but that one hasn't happened yet. Okay, I'll now open the public hearing, and Mr. Goodman, are you going to be speaking? Who? Say, Mr. Fetty?
Thank you, Madam Mayor, members of the council. If I may, before I introduce a couple of our guests here, respond to Mr. Easton's question and your question as well about the height. As it relates to the power lines, I apologize if there's any misunderstanding. We always have been proposing to accelerate the undergrounding of the first two poles that were mentioned, which also include really about 260 feet of power lines as they're spread out to open up the view shed along Hollister, and then the remaining poles would remain that are the ones along the property line or actually on the property line that actually straddle the property line on both sides of our fence between Kmart and Santa Barbara Business Park and our property that ultimately feed the post office property that really aren't visible from Hollister in a north-south fashion. As Mr. Chase pointed out, there are other opportunities to condition others for this as well. When Kmart redevelops, when activity at Santa Barbara Business Park, the potential post office facility, these are all items that are power lines that aren't just ours personally. These actually serve others and don't really serve, in fact, once they go south beyond a certain point, don't serve our property at all. So I wanted to offer that clarification and apologize if there was a misunderstanding on that. Our original undergrounding was actually determined was going to be, in, I think, part of phase six, and we're accelerating that to phase one, the first thing we do. So it's not something that'll get put off and down the road. The view shed on Hollister, along with the curb gutter sidewalk widening and bike lanes that will be installed in this first phase, will all be done at one time with that particular element. As it relates to the rotunda height issue, Madam Mayor, you brought up was something we've talked about quite a bit in our DRB hearings, and we actually provided a study for DRB showing the kind of a diagonal section from across the Los Canaros and Hollister intersection from the northeast corner to the southwest corner, northeast being the Cottage Hospital building. And the real big difference that I think in the context of this discussion that DRB saw the value in was that building 12 is actually set back about 170 feet from the curb, from the corner, as where I believe the Cottage Hospital building set back about 50 feet or 55 feet, something of that nature. And because of the elevation difference as well, while our building may be higher from the footprint itself, when you look at the section, they're about the same height. So it doesn't come off as some structure that's right up on the corner that's standing up quite, you know, real high. It's actually in proportion, really tastefully done, and we'll have quite a bit of hardscape and landscape in front that buffers it as well. So just for additional consideration. Before I introduce a couple of our guests here, I'd like to thank the city council and staff for everything you've done the past number of months to get to this point. Staff has their focus and their can-do attitude in processing these minor project and agreement changes you are here to take action on today have been really super. We appreciate staff's efforts and support their conclusions. And with the approval of these changes today, Cabrillo Business Park will be positioned to begin creating jobs here in 2011. It's been a long road. The first opportunity to do this is with the construction of the Deckers Outdoor Corporation World Headquarters. And you've heard enough from me on this as we've talked about it in several hearings. So in a moment, I'd like to introduce Angel Martinez, chairman of Deckers Outdoor Corporation, to tell you more about their company. And before I do that, I'd also like to thank the members of Deckers, employees who are also Goleta residents who have come here today and support and to hear, I guess, to watch sausage get made a little bit as to how it works in the end. What we do for a day job. Sometimes I wish I was doing what you guys are doing, making shoes, because this is challenging, but we greatly appreciate staff's efforts and the amount of work that you all have done in a very short period of time to help make this a reality for Deckers has been really incredible, and we really appreciate that. Angel Martinez has been the chairman of Deckers Outdoor Corporation since May of 2008, director since 2005, and chief executive officer and president since April of 2005. Angel is responsible for the day-to-day operations of Deckers Outdoor Corporation, oversees the management team, and drives the future development of its brands. He has extensive experience in brand building, where he has been instrumental in the development of successful and the success of many brands throughout his 26 years in the footwear industry. I'd like to introduce Angel Martinez.
Well, thank you very much, Steve. Let me just echo my thanks to Madam Mayor and the City Council for the opportunity to talk to you today, and also my thanks to our Goleta-based employees. It's a real privilege to be here. I, like most CEOs today, I'm at heart an optimist. I think it's tough to be in business today if you're not an optimist. And you have to sort of go back through the history of this company based here in this area and see that same optimism, that same power of possibility lived with the founder of the company, Doug Otto, who in 1973, in order to support his surfing habit as a UCSB student, he was graduating with a degree in finance, and like so many kids of that era, including myself, was dying to figure out how to make a living from his passion, from his hobby, which we all are trying to do. We don't all want to grow up to be sausage makers. I think in the end, we want to find something we can be passionate about. And Doug started making flip-flops for his fellow surfers out of his garage. That led to a facility in Carpinteria where they were making flip-flops. They were such good flip-flops, and they were called Deckers flip-flops, by the way, that a gentleman who had an idea for a strange new sandal, a guy named Mark Thatcher, who was a river guide on the Colorado River, who had invented this new idea so that sandals wouldn't fall off when you fell into the river, wouldn't slip on mossy rocks. And he wanted to find someone who made the best sandals and came to Doug. And he had a brand that he was trying to launch called Teva. Well, Teva became a big powerhouse. It defined an entire category of footwear. And Deckers Outdoor Corporation manufactured under license all of the Teva sandals until we acquired the brand approximately 1998. Teva was a huge success in the market. And to no small degree, because of the passion and commitment of all the people that were working on that brand, a very small company, I think at that time there were less than 140 people total, the bulk of them right here in Santa Barbara and Goleta. And you may not know it, but Deckers was on the map as a footwear powerhouse in the outdoor industry with the development and evolution of the Teva brand, which was copied and mimicked all over the world, but the original product was from Deckers. During the height of that success, a guy from Australia had this strange idea, because his feet got so cold when he was surfing after he came out of the water, that the sheepskin boots that people were wearing would be great to wear as an après surf, if you will, and decided to make a living from his passion and started selling those boots that he called UGG in the United States. He came to the U.S. He was a good friend of Doug's. It seems like every surfer I've ever met was a good friend of Doug's. And he started selling the boots here before too long, caught Doug's interest, and we acquired the UGG brand. The UGG brand at that time was strictly a surf brand. It was not a fashion icon that it is today. It took a heck of a lot of hard work, commitment, passion, dedication by the employees here in Goleta, because at that time we had moved to Goleta from Carpinteria. And we have now built an UGG brand that's over $800 million in revenue. The company itself is over $1 billion in revenue. When I joined the company in 2005, it was a little over $200 million in revenue. We had just about 200 employees in total. And today, almost 1,500 employees worldwide. Of the people here in this corporate office, about half live in Goleta. Now, as you can imagine, when you go through that kind of success, we've had a lot of attention from a lot of people, you know, from all the people on Wall Street who keep saying that UGG is a fad, and well, we sort of laugh all the way to the bank because luxury, comfort, and style are not a fad. To the success of our retail business, which people didn't think, well, how can you sell sheepskin boots in the middle of summer? How does that work? And but the UGG brand is a year-round brand with sandals and all kinds of other things besides the UGG slip, the traditional UGG product. So we've had a lot of people sort of question, is this a sustainable and viable company? And if you look at our share price and our performance over the last few years, I think we've converted even those non-believers. This is a very powerful company. It is in the footwear industry one of the lead companies, and it's compared to some of the giants in our industry on a regular basis. And it's based right here in little old Goleta. Now, when I came to the company, as I said, we were much smaller. I thought it would be important to keep this company here at its cultural home. And I think brands are important, companies are important, and they derive their energy from the community that they operate in. I'm a big believer of that. And for lots of reasons, I think that this is a company that needs to stay here, right here in Goleta. Now, we got to the point where we've outgrown our facility. I've got people who are operating in less than ideal conditions in that office, for example. And our growth cannot be stopped because we don't have a physical plant. So we're going to be taking actually additional space in this park, and we're now spread into three buildings. One of the companies that I helped found is called Reebok. You've probably heard of Reebok. I was a third employee of Reebok. We were doing $1.3 million in 1980. Reebok, when it was sold to Adidas, was $3.5 billion. At one point with Reebok, we had 800 employees in Stoughton, Massachusetts, spread out over five different buildings. It was a nightmare. So not wanting to repeat that scenario, we decided that we needed a corporate headquarters and we needed to build it right here in Goleta, which I think sent a cheer through the entire building. And I feel that it is hugely important for communities like this one to have the benefit of companies like Deckers in their midst. I've always said to people here in town, I grew up in Northern Cal, lived all over the country, but recently, you know, came here from New England. And, you know, one of the problems I see long-term for this community is it may end up as, and, you know, I'm kind of getting up there myself. I'm an AAR. I'm not a member of AARP, but I'm getting close, just because I haven't joined, not because I haven't qualified. But I don't want this community to end up a geriatric wasteland, as they say, with a lot of older people, a lot of service providers who don't live here, and nowhere for your kids to get a job. You know, I have a 25, 26-year-old. He works with a company. I think he would have been hired even if I hadn't been here, because he's a good kid. And lots of other people like him. This is an important company in this community. We pay high wages. These are very specialized jobs. They're in demand jobs. We're luring some of the best talent in marketing, in IT, in website creation, in product design, et cetera, to this area. These are people who, you know, it's never been a problem luring people to Santa Barbara and Goleta. That's not the problem. The problem has been finding a job, finding housing, you know, all of those things. And we're a facilitator of that. We make that happen. By the time this office building opens, we'll have 400 employees there. By that time, we'll probably have over 2,000 employees worldwide. It's all of the trips that people take to come to the corporate headquarters to see the new product line, which if you knew how many people show up here and, you know, fly into Santa Barbara, it's shocking, actually. I think Michelle can probably tell me, I don't know how many days of hotel rooms. I mean, it's in the hundreds and hundreds. We have sales meetings that regularly are 350, 400 people, and they fly from all over the world to come here. And we want to have a campus that makes us all proud, that makes the community proud. And, you know, I don't have a problem with having a vision for this to be the most respected and the number one destination for people to work in this, on the Central Coast. That's my goal. That was my goal when I got here. And we're making some decent progress. But I think that what's missing is a place to live as a company. And that's why I'm so happy to be here, excited to be here, and so hopeful that you will approve our plan, which I think I look at it and can't wait to move in. And I can't wait to show it off. I think it's something that is exactly the kind of thing that communities like Goleta need. And to be able to do this in this economic environment is actually unique. It's a bit of a privilege for me to stand here and have this conversation with you, built on our success. And I think it's a great thing for the city of Goleta to have a company like Deckers that's able to do this. And not only able to, but feels privileged to. And believe me, the phone does ring from all those people in Nevada and Arizona and all these places that want us to go, and Texas, Dallas. I say yuck to that, because once you've lived here, you're pretty much, that's it. Can't live anywhere else. And we intend to stay here. So I look forward to having you all at the grand opening and having a toast. And I think we'll all have done a great thing for this community when this building is approved. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Easton?
I'd just like to thank you for the Tevas that I bought when I started kayaking 30 years ago. The difficulty is for you that, like Patagonia, the stuff don't wear out. So I've still got them, and I wish I could kayak more.
One request, and which I'm hopeful, please don't wear white socks with your Tevas. Any other questions? Let me answer.
Well, we do thank you, and we're very hopeful that we can bring this to a satisfactory conclusion. And I think what's interesting is that we so often hear that the problem with businesses starting up here, when they need to expand, there's nowhere for them to expand, so then they go to Ventura or somewhere else. And it looks like you're planning for that expansion right here. And so that could be very exciting.
That is our expectation. That's our goal. And I think certainly our employees are really excited about that potential. And, you know, at this point, if it weren't to happen, I'd have a revolution on my hands, just so you know. So thank you all very much.
All right, thank you. Mr. Fetty?
Thanks, Angel, for telling us all a little bit about Deckers. To get into some a little more detail for all of you to talk about how those economics work, I'm going to introduce you to Dr. Mark Schneep, who's the director of the Economic Forecast, or California Economic Forecast, who has does this sort of thing where he analyzes economic impacts for communities, also does general economic forecasting. Mark prepares economic analysis and county-level forecasts for Caltrans, Kaiser Permanente, the California Association of Realtors, Southern California Association of Governments, and many others, and also analyzes and presents local and regional economic data in communities all over California. Dr. Schneep served as senior economist to Kathleen Connell in the California State Controller's Office from 1999 to 2003, and served as director of the Economic Forecast Project at the University of California, Santa Barbara, between 1982 and 2000. By analyzing and preparing forecasts on so many local and regional California economies, Mark has a very unique perspective on what economic development is really about and how critical it is to have major job creators like Deckers Outdoor as a community member. Switching hats to my chairman of the Chamber of Commerce here for a second. As I've talked many, many times till you all don't want to hear me anymore, companies like Deckers are not only major job creators, but the economic multiplier effect on the community from their clean, green, high-paying jobs is what supports our retailers and hotels, generates tax revenue to fund public safety and infrastructure, and whose employees actively support our local charities and our schools. Today, Mark is going to walk you through the incredibly positive economic impacts of that just one locally founded company, Deckers Outdoor Corporation, has on our community. Dr. Schneep.
All right. Well, I hope I can continue the fun part of the program here with information that you've probably not seen before. So we have a lot of pictures to show you. And I want to start off with talking a little bit about the city of Goleta, the economy here in the city of Goleta or in the Goleta Valley area, to kind of as a backdrop to what we've determined, at least partially, what Deckers contributes to the city of Goleta economy. Okay, sometimes that's difficult to do because of the jurisdictional nebulousness of the boundaries. Okay, right now in Goleta, we've got an economic recovery underway, but a lot of us wouldn't think so, because it is still weak, but it's coming. We have a decade's worth of job creation to make up, because we've lost 10 years' worth of jobs. And we did it between 2007 and 2010, so we're now at levels that we haven't seen in more than 10 years. So we got a long way to go, but that's currently underway. The unemployment rate remains high. That's one of the problems, because it is so high all over the country, including here. Office vacancy rates, the commercial sector is improving slowly, okay, but it still exceeds 10%, and it's nowhere in a good position right now. But at least it's moving in the right direction in terms of busyness, and occupancy is increasing. And then the retail markets, well, they're starting to come back slowly, but nevertheless, they're starting to come back. But we're well below the peak that we achieved back in the mid part of the decade. So I'll show you some evidence of that as we go through here. Here's employment in the county. It's pretty much going to be the same if you break down the county into Goleta, Santa Barbara, Santa Maria, Lompoc, whatever the case may be. It looks pretty much like this. Here's where we are right now. We're at 2010. And you can see that's the lowest level we've seen since 2000. So we have a lot to make up because we had such a severe recession. Okay, so jobs are at a premium. So anything that we can do to create jobs is kind of like that's one of the main motivations of economic development right now. If I look at this same picture monthly so that you can see what's going on through April of this year, we're not seeing a lot of improvement here or in many places. But California is coming back. We've actually created over 100,000 jobs in California this year, but we lost 1.3 million, so we still got a long way to go. Okay, there's where we are now, not much improvement on the job front. Unemployment rates improved a little bit, but not really much, right, 8.5%. in the county as of April. Okay, so not a lot of progress yet. But nevertheless, we're moving in the right direction. Office vacancy, as I said, is off its highs, and it's currently at right around 11% as of the spring of this year. So as some jobs get created and people start maneuvering around in office space because the deals are so good, you're starting to see some more absorption. Okay, so, but it's going to take a while to get back to the lows. Industrial vacancy looks a lot better because it's scarce. Okay, we're probably around 6% as of spring, industrial in the city of Goleta. Okay, so that's improved. But we haven't really built much, and that's why it is tight. I mean, even here's the commercial industrial investment in building in the jurisdictional boundaries of the city of Goleta over time. This is millions of dollars of investment of buildings, and that's this year. So nothing's really gone on this year. Nothing's really gone on the last few years, as you can see. The last big bumps here were the Yardie office. And then on a residential side, here's the number of units that have been permitted within the jurisdiction of Goleta over the last about 10 years. And this year, there's just two. And there were two last year and one in 2009. Here's a little history lesson. What was this in 2008?
Sumita.
Sumita Gardens.
Sumita Gardens. And in 2002?
Willow Springs, maybe?
Willow Springs, very good. But other than those two, there really hasn't been much residential activity within the city. There's a lot in the pipeline, a lot in entitlement queue, but nothing's really gone through yet. Okay. As far as the home market, city of Goleta, south of 101. Okay, actually, this includes the entire Goleta Valley, so it goes beyond the city. But for the most part, it's going to be the same. We really haven't seen home prices come back yet. They seem to be leveling off, but no increase yet. So that's been a sluggish housing market. The housing market has been one of the big problems, of course, for the economy. There's north of Goleta, same kind of thing. Okay, and these are very fresh data through May of this year. So we're not seeing much on the housing market yet, but that the interest rates are very low, and we are starting to see a pickup of activity. So again, the recovery is on, but a lot of people don't know it yet. All right, we are seeing it here with regard to increased visitors, increased utilization of hotels, and the transient occupancy taxes are up because hotel revenues are up. And this is annualized so that if the first 4 months of the year, that rate continues for the rest of the 8 months of 2011, this is where you're going to end up in 2011. So it'll be quite a sharp increase due to a return of tourism. Okay. And then retail sales that are taxable in the city of Goleta, you can see that now that has turned around, too, from the depths of the recession. Still a long way from the peak, but at least some progress is being made in terms of increased consumer spending. You should be seeing some of your tax receipts starting to rise in the last year, as your transient taxes were. But it's a long haul, as you can see. And any economic stimulus that can be provided in this kind of a recovering economy is going to be sorely needed, needless to say. So let's talk about Deckers and what this company is contributing right now, the importance to Goleta. Currently, when we did our last survey of the largest employers in Santa Barbara County, it had 273 employees. That was this year. Okay, 81 reside in the city of Goleta because we got a full printout of where the residents were. Where the employees were by residence, and 40 new people are expected to be hired this year, so it'll be a total of 313 will be in the world headquarters of Deckers here in 2011. Okay, and there's about 2.7 people per household in the city of Goleta, so if we apply that to the number of people that live here, there's about 254 residents in Goleta that are directly dependent on Deckers. And that accounts for roughly a little bit less than 1% of the total city population. So Deckers accounts for about a little bit less in terms of residents and city population, about 1%. Okay, not a big deal, but so the bigger impacts are really going to be with the expenditures that go on by the company. And by the way, I think Angel mentioned it, ranked by market cap, Deckers is the second largest company headquartered in the Tri-Counties economy. Do you know that? That's quite a fact. Okay, surpassed only by Amgen in terms of market cap. Here's the stock price of Deckers. Okay, you can see the run-up has been just phenomenal the last year, 18 months. So it's quite a growing company right at this point in time. Let's talk about income and spending. The payroll by Deckers this year is going to be $41 million. Okay, based on that's here. Okay, in Goleta, this equals an average of just under $131,000 per worker when you divide the two. Okay, the direct effect. Economists like to look at direct effects, indirect effects, and induced effects. That's the whole total economic effect, and it incorporates the multiplier. All right. So the direct effect on Goleta is who Deckers hires, the jobs, and the total income that those workers make, and then the total spending that Deckers has in the community. That's the direct effect, okay, in the local economy. The indirect and induced effects are Deckers does all this spending, and they spend on goods and services in the community. The company itself does. And firms then have to provide these goods and services to Deckers. So in doing so, they have to buy a bunch of materials, and they have to hire a bunch of people to do that. Those are the indirect effects. Those are additional employment effects that are caused by Deckers' spending. Okay. And then there are the induced effects, okay, which are all of the spending by Deckers' employees who earn payroll. All right, those are the induced effects. And those dollars all trickle through the community, and they create additional jobs and additional income. So you can see that's the multiplier process causing this big spiraling economic effect in a local economy. And so it tends to be more than just the straight dollars that Deckers spends in the economy. It's a lot more than that because of all the secondary and tertiary effects that occur. How do we estimate these effects? Well, it can be a tough time. It's very data intensive. Okay. We estimate the induced effects of spending by Deckers employees in the Goleta economy. Okay. And then so how do we know if the employees are spending it in Goleta? You know, we have lots of survey data that shows us where people spend their money, how much close to home, and on what category. We have that. That's done by tons of surveys, so we can apply that information. We have it by region of the country, and we have it by level of income. All right? And so the profile of consumers in the western region of the United States with incomes over $70,000 closely matches the Deckers employee. So we can apply a lot of those effects to Deckers employees to determine how much they're spending in Goleta as opposed to Santa Barbara or elsewhere. So we can really kind of nail that down. It is an estimate because, you know, you're going to get noise to that, but nevertheless you can do it. So here's what we know. We know that Santa Barbara, Carpinteria, Goleta, Ventura County, North County are all the locations of Deckers employees. But this is of the roster, this is where they're located, this is where they live. Okay, got this information from the company itself. So Goleta has 93 when you factor in the new hires this year. So we know Deckers employees have got to spend locally because they live here. What are they going to spend on? Well, here's how it kind of boils out. They're going to spend on food at home. Almost 100% of all that expenditure is going to be here in Goleta. You're going to go to Vaughn's, you're going to go to Albertsons, you're going to go to Costco. Not going to go really anywhere else. You don't need to, right? And then food away from home, they're going to eat most of it in stuffed restaurants and other locales here in Goleta. And then the rest is going to be in Santa Barbara, for the most part, or on vacation. Utilities, household operations, a lot of their gasoline, on and on and on. We get this all from the surveys. So residents are going to spend a major part of their incomes here. We just know that. Okay. But if you live in Santa Barbara, you're going to spend a lot less because you're going to go home, you're going to go to Ralph's and things like that in Santa Barbara. You're not going to spend as much here. But you're going to still buy a lot of gas here and do a lot of spending, particularly on your lunch hour and things like that. So we apply these percentages. And then if you live everywhere else, such as in Ventura County or in North County, you're going to spend even less. But you're still going to spend money here. Okay, a lot less. And these are conservative estimates. You know, we don't have none of these, no entertainment at all. No utilities, of course, but some little gas because Deckers is the midpoint of a commute, a long commute for some of these people. So we apply all this information on their spending, and here's what we get. We get $3.3 million in expenditure in Goleta by Goleta residents, $1.3 million by Santa Barbara residents, everyone else about $250,000. When you add it all up, you get a total of about $4.9 million spent in Goleta by Decker's employees. Okay? $4.9 million by these 313 employees. And of that $4.9 million, $3.3 million is taxable, which means that's money that, of course, has sales tax applied and goes to the city of Goleta, partially, and then to the state of California. And County of Santa Barbara, right. Now, the $4.9 million spent by Deckers, approximately $1.2 million of it goes to wage and salary costs for those vendors who provided the goods and salary. Okay? And so we can determine that that $1.2 million hires 58 additional jobs. So 58 additional jobs are created by the economic multiplier process by the spending of Decker's employees. Okay? There is other jobs that are created by the spending of Decker's as a corporation. But we didn't have any of that information. Just know that that's additional monies that are being spent in the local economy, in Santa Barbara and in Goleta. Okay? That we don't quite have a full handle on yet. So it's a very conservative estimate. So the direct and induced effects, when you add all these employees up, is 371 total jobs in the city of Goleta. But there's more. There's more than just that. There's property taxes, too. 93 workers that live in Goleta contribute substantially to property taxes. And so based on our survey estimates, and then we've adjusted for housing values here, about $750,000 are collected in property taxes by residents of Goleta who work at Decker's. Okay, that's a big amount that goes to schools and fund other agencies throughout Santa Barbara County, but principally in the city of Goleta. And then an indirect effect is, as Angel mentioned, all of the transient visitors that are induced into the city by Decker's. Okay, as a worldwide headquarters, it's the destination for a lot of business meetings. And so when we looked at the information that we were given, we were able to estimate that about 1,500 bed nights per year are booked in Goleta. Now, there's over 3,000 throughout the South Coast, but only about half of them land in Goleta, okay, conservatively, as a direct result of the Decker's meetings. An average rate of $189 per night, an estimated total of $283,000, nearly $300,000 a year spent at local hotels. So those are additional impacts that go on here in the city. Okay, and then but we didn't even quantify because we had really no way, so I just wanted to at least mention it, that we don't have any of the expenditures by those visitors at restaurants or our expenditures on transportation. And those are going to get into the city. So don't have that, but you know that's a big deal too. That could boost the city of Goleta even further. All right? At least the local spending on hotels alone will generate 7 additional jobs in the transient industry per year, at least here in the city of Goleta. Okay, so there's more jobs that are created. All right, and then I didn't talk about the indirect effects of direct company spending on supplies, materials, catering, whatever the case may be. But those are additional effects. That could be another $1 million in the Goleta County economy. It would probably create another 25 to 30 additional jobs. So now we're up over 400. Okay. Now, when we construct the new office complex, the Cabrillo Business Park, there's enough space there to accommodate 570 workers, 313 now. So all the impacts that I've talked about multiply by another 82%. Because that's what you're going to get once the office complex would be complete and Decker's hires out to fill it. Okay, so the impacts that I've talked about are just what's going on right now. We're talking about the future when there's a lot more workers at Decker's. Now, the building will cost $30 million plus $10 million for furniture, fixtures, and equipment. And that's going to boost the Goleta Valley economy during the construction phase. All right, of the $30 million spent on new buildings, an estimated 25% goes to labor and about 75% to equipment and materials and construction supplies and et cetera. All
Right, so approximately $7.5 million in payroll income would go to construction workers, and many of those construction workers are going to be hired locally. They're going to be all the subcontractors. Okay. Average construction worker salary per year is about $50,000 per worker. And so therefore, when you do the math during the construction phase of the project, this will create an additional 102 full-time jobs on average per month during the 18 months of construction. Okay, so the more jobs created, that will be a very big benefit to Goleta. And then I haven't even quantified what those construction workers will spend in the Goleta Valley economy due to time off, I mean, during lunchtime and et cetera, and gasoline that they have to buy and other retail goods that they will incidentally purchase. Okay. Majority of the construction materials will be purchased for the project will come from outside the Goleta Valley because they're big, heavy construction materials, right? And it's likely to be purchased here small, but whatever. There still will be large effects because there's such a large quantity of expenditure for this particular construction that even if a small percentage occurs in Goleta, it will result in a lot of money circulating through the businesses here. If, say, 20% of the furniture, fixtures, and equipment are purchased locally, then that benefit to Goleta suppliers is estimated at $600,000. Okay, much of that will be taxable as well. So let me give you the summary. Retail sales of $3.4 million per year, taxable, bring in $34,000 in sales tax receipts. Property taxes of $759,000 go principally to local schools and services. Hotel bed taxes, around $30,000 per year. Out-of-town visitors, didn't quantify that, but their spending adds even more dollars. Additional 65 Goleta jobs are directly dependent upon Deckers at least. From what we can. Again, we're being very conservative with the estimates. And then construction of the new complex is going to bring jobs and a lot of income to local merchants during the construction phase. And then finally, because Deckers is an expanding company, these benefits are only going to increase to the city of Goleta over time. Okay. I want to do it quickly, not waste a lot of your time, but it's all new information. And those are our estimated impacts. Any questions?
Thank you. We won't have to go to the economic forecast next year.
No, you still have to go.
Questions? Questions from anyone? That was very illuminating. Thank you. Steve, Ms. Petty, do we have any more speakers, or is that it?
We thought Mark would be enough.
We'll keep those numbers and we'll check in a couple of years and see how they pan out. Are any questions from anybody or any other people who wish to speak on this item before I close the public hearing? Okay, we have one more.
Can you hear me? Oh, okay. Michael Rattray, CEO of Boys and Girls Club. I actually think I might use Mark's PowerPoint slides, but I won't. I've been in this community since the 70s, put my whole career at Raytheon, so I know a lot about a good corporate citizen, and I'm here to talk about that here. We've, now that since I've been at the Boys and Girls Club, we've really had an opportunity to appreciate the beauty of having a company like Deckers giving to human and health services in our community. And personally, I'd like to just share one quick story which just touches our heart. Last year, we had a van that broke down. And in our business, we have to transport kids or we can't get them to our clubs from the schools. And we went to Deckers, and they gave us enough money to buy that van. It was an emergency situation, and you just don't have companies like that that just open up their checkbook immediately and take care of organizations in need. So I just want to thank them publicly and let you know that they really do help this community tremendously. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any further people who wish to speak this afternoon? If not, I'll close the public hearing and then we'll move to council deliberation. Mr. Easton, do you wish to begin?
I didn't think there was any question about whether we wanted Deckers here. There seemed to be a fairly unanimity of opinion in City Hall about we needed to get this through. And I didn't anticipate having any significant questions of my own. Given the presentation that we've had, I have even less question about that than I had before. Just to get the subject on the table, we can certainly continue to make comments, but I would like to move, and I'll just take A and let my cohorts take care of B and C. I would like to move resolution number 11, next in series, entitled the resolution of the City Council of City of Goleta, California, certifying the addendum dated May 27, 2011, to the Cabrillo Business Park Environmental Impact Report. I don't do this well as a Michael. Parentheses 37-SB-EIR, close parentheses, and to addenda dated April 23, 2007, and October 24, 2008, for the Cabrillo Business Park Deckers Project Development Agreement Amendment, parentheses 11-046-0A, close parentheses, and Development Plan Development Agreement Amendment Number 2, parentheses 11-037-DP, space AM, close parentheses, 6767 Hollister Avenue, APNs 073-610-001, comma 02 003 004 005 006 008 009 010 011 012 013 015 016 017 018 and 019. And if I might get a second.
Second. It's been moved and seconded to approve the resolution, the first resolution in the report.
Can we clarify that the motion includes the staff modifications that were read into the record earlier?
So included.
The second? Okay, it's understood. All right. Is there further discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? So carried. Who would like to recite the next one? Mr. Bennett, you like to do this.
Surely, I'll be happy to do so. I'd like to make a motion supporting staff recommendation B, introduce and conduct first reading by title only and waive further reading of ordinance number 11, next in order, entitled An Ordinance of the City Council of the City of Goleta, California, adopting the First Amendment to the Development Agreement by and between, : City of Goleta and Santa Barbara Realty Holding Company, LLC, 6767 Hollister Avenue, APNs 073-610-001, , 005, 006, 010, 011, 012, 013, 015, 017, 018, and 019, case number 11-046-OA.
May I have a second?
As amended by the staff recommendations.
Okay.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So carried. Ms. Perotti, would you like to do C?
Like to make a motion? Sorry about that. To approve and authorize the city manager to execute a reimbursement agreement regarding the construction of public facilities by and between the City of Goleta and Santa Barbara Realty Development, LLC, in substantial conformance with attachment 4.
Second then.
Okay. That's been moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So carried, 4-0. Thank you very much. Thank you all for coming.
Continue and, to the 21st.
And hope that you will be working here in Goleta for many years. And thank you.
Mayor and council members, I just wanted to check whether or not we needed to formally continue this to June 21st for the second reading.
There's no need to continue the item. The approval's there, but we will have it on the agenda. Has been noticed for second hearing and adoption on the meeting of the 21st. And that's required before the ordinance would take effect.
Okay. Is that just for the ordinance? Not
correct.
Just for B. So next Tuesday is the last round, we hope. So, again, thank you all very much. And I also would like to thank our staff who have worked incredibly hard, particularly Joanna, our assistant city attorney, and Patty Miller. You know, I think there have been many overtime hours spent on this, and it's wonderful to get it at least to this far along in terms of its moving forward. So, again, thank you, staff.
Thank you.
All right.